Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the history of silver right after this. Now, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've now been banned from our public schools, banned from our public institutions and our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple, time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And they're teaching these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national psyche. You know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years, don't you think? Are you aware, for instance, your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school without even your knowledge, much less your consent? Now, that's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments in the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments. They even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's still at least one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits for their observance. Now, you know, every law has a penalty. You don't have to know what the penalty to the law is to suffer from its effect. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, Natural Law, or Karma, or something else, it works automatically. It works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happen to be the natural penalties for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package. That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the email and send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. All right, I'm talking about the history of silver. And we're reviewing an article here by a fellow named Jeff Nielsen. A three-part article here, the history of silver, part one, part two, and part three. We're in part three here. Last time I mentioned to you that 90% of all of the silver that's ever been mined on planet Earth has been lost. 90%'s gone. In fact, 50 years ago, we had 90% more silver than we have today. And there's some real concern on the part of those of us that follow the precious metals like gold and silver as to how much real gold and silver are there or is there in these warehouses. How much is actually in there? We don't know. We have pronouncements, you know, we have numbers that are bandied about. But then when we see the performance in the marketplace, you know, we've got to sit here and ask ourselves, why does it take 3 or 4 months to ship an order? Is it because you don't have the goods? Or it's in such short supply, you've got to ration it out? Now, I mentioned to you that there, last time, I said there's 21 things here that we've covered here on the history of silver. Just quickly, let's see if you've got them all down here on your list. The price of silver to gold in the 2nd century A.D. hit 2 to 1. That is, 2 ounces of silver was equal to 1 ounce of gold. That's the highest price in the history of the world for gold and silver. Now, in 1344, the price of silver reached $857 an ounce in 1997 dollar terms in the Middle Ages in Europe. $857 an ounce in 1997 purchasing power. One half of all silver is in India today. The ratio of the gold-silver, as I speak, is 70 to 1. And at 70 to 1, there's a 400% profit to make on the arbitrage trade. At 60 to 1, it's 375%. So put another way, 10 ounces of gold will buy 700 ounces of silver today. And when the price ratio moves back to 16 to 1, which is its historical norm, 70 ounces of silver will convert into 40 ounces of gold, which gives you a 4 times profit. In 1919, in 1943, and in 1980, the ratios hit 16 to 1, 3 times in the 20th century. That's about once every 30 years. Then number 9, we talked about arbitrage with bullion. That bullion, that's the way you make your profit, arbitrage, buy it at a price that you know later is going to go up. Avoid numismatic coins because they have high premiums. 90% of the silver is now gone. 16-year supply left for clothes only. If you just took the amount of silver that's being consumed, 1,200 tons a year, extrapolated it into all the silver that's in the warehouses today, you'd run out of it in 16 years for that one application. Silver is oversold 15 years into the future. Gold is also oversold 15 years into the future. 82% of all gold and silver trade is traded on paper. Only 18% is taken in physical by the purchaser. We are fractionally reserving our gold and silver inventory. The COMEX is an empty shell. Money is metals are traded on the London Metal Exchange at the rate of $10 billion a day. That's $3.5 trillion a year. It's the third largest market in the world. It is called a barbaric relic of the past, but it's bigger than the stock markets around the world. And buying a futures contract to get physicals is a modality that we use to bypass the slow delivery. So if you're concerned about slow delivery or can you get delivery at all, you buy a futures contract which calls for delivery when the contract is up. Now, in 1959, there were 9 billion ounces of known global stockpiles at a time when the world had less than half the current population. But that 90% of the world's silver supply is now gone, even making a generous allowance for the hundreds of millions of ounces of scrap silver which could appear on the market given a significant increase in price. Now, if the price of silver were to go up, let's say, for our discussion here, went up to $50 an ounce, there would be a lot of silver show up. You know, people that have got silver, you know, tucked away in drawers and out in the garage or up in the attic and places, you know, silver service and that silver rings and things, you know, silver jewelry. There's a lot of it out there. We don't doubt that. But nowhere near the amount that's been consumed. There's a media hype. There's been a disinformation going on here for the last 50 years concerning gold and silver by our government, by the big Wall Street banks, and by business and industry to give everybody the illusion that gold and silver are barbaric relics of the past, when in reality those very same people have stockpiled all of the gold and silver they can get their hands on. You don't need to be concerned about the Rothschilds being short of gold, or the Rockefellers, or George Bush, or our new Treasury Secretary Gaither. You can rest assured that all those boys have all the gold and all the silver that they want and need. In fact, to give you an illustration as to how disproportionate it is, 95% of all Americans have no gold or silver at all. You know, save for a ring or two that nearly everybody has a gold ring. But I mean, you know, if we talk about who possesses the gold and silver in America, 5% of the people of America, 15 million people, hold, control, and possess 100% of the gold and silver. And it's that way around the world. The central banks have it piled up. The metals markets have it piled up. The people of India have half of all the silver in the world is sitting in one country. They do not recognize gold and silver as being a barbaric relic of the past. All right, now, in a world with twice as many people and with an ever-increasing number of uses for silver, we have 90% less silver to divide among us. Now, how can this possibly make silver less precious? So just ask the experts. Because silver is an industrial metal, this means it's no longer a precious metal. You know, that's nonsense. If we discovered a cure for cancer tomorrow which required gold as an input, would anyone suggest this made gold less of a precious metal? Well, beyond that is the even less intelligent wisdom of the market. Silver is no longer deemed to be a precious metal because people don't think of it as a precious metal any longer. Who are these people that they're referring to that don't regard gold and silver as a precious metal? It's certainly not the people of China or the people of India who make up one-third of the world's population between them. Yes, in India, rising incomes fueled a greater level of demand for gold for several years because people could afford it. But now with the price of gold having risen to 900 an ounce and the price ratio with silver so extremely warped, the pendulum has swung back in India, with silver now demand rising while gold demand is stagnant. And it's certainly not the people of Germany who no longer see silver as a precious metal. Silver developed deep cultural significance to Germans when they experienced the hyperinflation of the Weimar Republic. And silver became a crucial store of wealth and real money for an entire population. It's not the people of Mexico who regard it as a barbaric relic, where just a couple of years ago the government openly contemplated the possibility of reintroducing a silver currency in place of the peso. Here in the United States, the Constitution still defines the U.S. dollar as a measurement of silver. And of course, this has become an archaic document which hardly anybody pays any attention to anymore. I don't deny that. But the fact is that apart from a lot of experts on CNBC and Wall Street, it's hard to find any significant group of people who don't think of silver as a precious metal. And yet with the price ratio of gold and silver currently nearing 70-1, the actual amount of silver available and gold available in the world is likely to be no more than 6-1 with many actual experts, including Ted Butler, convinced that the ratio is even lower than that. So the ratio should be 17 to 1. We count it in money circles or metal circles at 16 to 1. It's now valued at 70 to 1, which is way out of balance, way out of balance, which is good for me. I'm not complaining about it. I'm just here to report. So if I had 10 ounces of gold, or when I accumulate 10 ounces of gold, I take it into the gold broker. Anything that's over 60 to 1, I take into the gold broker, and I drop it on the counter, and he gives me silver. Then I wait for that magic day when the price of gold and silver goes back to 16 to 1, and I expect to make my profit. Now, sometimes people say, but what if the price of silver doesn't go to 16 to 1? So what? What difference does it make to me if I keep my savings in silver or I keep my savings in gold? I still have my savings, don't I? There was a guy the other day, he was making fun of me. You know, I'd sold a piece of ground here to a guy on time. And he went to this guy, he was a tare, see, like the story of the tares and the wheat. And he went to this guy and he said, that guy Gordon is a lying thief and you shouldn't buy from him. So the guy came back to me and he said, give me back my money. So I gave him back his money. I didn't have a contract with him anyway. I took his earnest money, and we were going to write up a contract, make a deal. And the guy was really happy about that, and he said to me, ha, ha, I squirreled your deal. And I said to the guy, I said, how's that? And he said, well, you had this sale of your land over here, and I told that guy you were a lying thief, and he got his money back. And I said, yeah, that's true. But how do you see that as costing me something? He said, well, you lost all that gold. And I said, you lose anything. I've got my wealth in the form of land. What's wrong with holding your wealth in the form of land? Since when has land become valueless? You know, you people out there, a lot of times I think that you've gotten your values skewed here in some way. You make merchandise of your inheritance, and there's a number of statutes in the Bible. For instance, in Leviticus 25, verse 23, it says, the land shall not be sold forever, because the land is mine, and you're strangers and sojourners with me. The land out here is an inheritance. We've received this land as an inheritance. We went out and made merchandise of it. That's why you need to have a licensed real estate broker. And we go out here and we buy, sell, and trade in land, or we buy, sell, and trade in real estate. And we make our houses, our homes, our abodes into ATM machines, and we speculate with them. And now they're being foreclosed on. Now we mortgaged them to the banks, and the banks are taking them away from us. I never lost my land. I said I would trade this piece of property over here for gold, which is known as portable land. Portable land, gold. But if I don't get the gold, I still have the land. How have I been depreciated? I haven't lost anything. So I'm going to hold my wealth in some form. It may be in land, it may be in gold or silver. I've got to have my savings somewhere. Now, most people want their savings in the bank. And I'm not quite sure why. With inflation running at 13%, you're losing 13% per annum. Some people keep it in stocks. Well, if you bought stocks in the year 1960 and sold them in 2000, over that 40-year period, you lost $3,800. If you had $10,000 worth of stocks in 1960 on the Dow Jones Industrial Average, you lost $3,800 in purchasing power. You went from $10,000 to $70,000 and some change. You're sitting there with $70,000, and you look at that and you say, gee, I made $70,000, $60,000 of its profit. No, you didn't. You lost $3,800 in purchasing power. That's what it boils down to. $3,800 in 1960 dollar purchasing power is what you lost on the transaction. People in America can't count. They go to public school, and then when they come out of public school, they've been dumbed down to such a degree that they can no longer think intelligently. They can't count any longer. I was watching Jay Leno on the internet the other day. Here's a little exercise for you. Remember, Jay Leno was the host for 17 years, I believe it was, many years, on The Tonight Show. Took over from Johnny Carson. And he had a segment on there called Jaywalking. And he'd go out on the street, and he'd just take people at random. Typically, he'd go to a college campus, and he'd start asking college kids some questions, you know. And so they had the best of Leno, and he's going around on the streets here asking people some questions. And I was watching it, and let me give you a couple of three illustrations. He goes up to this one young fella, and he said, where might we find the Great Wall of China? And the guy thought about it for a minute, and he said, would you find it in New York? Or I forgot where he said it was, but it wasn't China. And then he asked the guy, he said, well, where do you think you might find the Panama Canal? And the guy, after he had told him that the Great Wall of China was in China, he asked him the question, where would you find the Panama Canal? And he said, in China. There was a young woman there, and he said, where did the pilgrims land when they got to the New World? And she was kind of thinking about it, and he said, it's the name of a moving company. And she said, U-Haul? Now, we kind of laugh and chuckle at things like this, but he asked questions that, you know, you should have been able to answer, you know, by the time you were 9, 10 years old, you know. The Pilgrims landed at Plymouth Rock in Massachusetts, you know. It was Plymouth, Massachusetts, and Mayflower is the name of the moving company, you know. The name of the ship that they got over here on was called the Mayflower. That was one of the questions that was asking. And then he said, what's the name of a moving company? Now, here's the scary part of this. These people are adults, and these people vote. My God, these people vote. And they're going to make policy on questions of bailouts for the mega banks on Wall Street and national health care insurance. And these people that can't answer a question like, where is the Panama Canal, are going to decide complex issues like national health care policy. And I tell you, boys and girls, I don't think there's much hope for saving what's here on planet Earth. And in fact, in Matthew 24, the Messiah said that what's coming upon the Earth, called the Great Tribulation, will come as a snare and capture you. It's a snare. I fully believe that. Now, there are some people out here, you know, that can still think. I'm not suggesting to you that the whole nation has turned into automatons, but I wanted to point out that if that's representative of the average Joe Sixpack on the street, that means that 50% of the people are smarter than that, and 50% of the people are dumber than that. Can you imagine being dumber than not knowing where the Great Wall of China or the Panama Canal is, or what the ship that brought the Pilgrims to America was named, or, you know, these simple questions that used to be, when I was a kid, if you couldn't answer those by third or fourth grade, we'd think you were retarded. These people are adults and they're on college campuses. These people are the leaders, you know, of the future. All right, now with that said, these people haven't got a clue as to precious metals. Not a clue. A guy that doesn't know that the Great Wall of China is located in China sure as hell isn't the guy you want to be asking about gold and silver now, is it? Now, I mentioned to you the other day this thing called arbitrage. And I told you about Franklin Sanders here. Here's the phone number. Write this down, because I think it's worth a lot of money to you. I can't tell you the details of arbitrage, but Franklin Sanders here, the guy that writes The Money Changer, wrote a book. It's a manual, you know, probably 100 pages. It's not, you know, some big, huge scientific treatise, but it's 100 pages or so. And it goes through the details of this thing I mentioned to you the last time. It was called arbitrage, where you buy gold today at $938 an ounce, and then you convert the gold into silver. And then you convert the silver into four times as much gold at a time in the future when it goes back to 16 to 1, which it always goes back to 16 to 1 at some point in time, always has in the past. The historical ratio has been, you know, 13, 14, 15, 16 to 1. It's out to 70 to 1. It always goes back to 16 to 1 at some point in time, historically. We're all sitting here saying, well, at some point in time, history will repeat itself again. It does it about every 30 years. Last time it did it was in 1980. It's been about 30 years, about time for it to do it again. So Franklin Sanders' phone number is 888, get your pencil out there, it's 888, toll free, 218-9226. Once more, that's 888-218-9226. The reason I give you this line here, this money changer, Franklin Sanders, is because he wrote a book called Why Silver Will Outperform Gold 400%. And I think he hit the nail on the head. Right now it's 70 to 1, and this is the first time it's been to 70 to 1 for a long time. I missed it. I thought it was going to go from 45 to 1 to 16 to 1 here a couple of years ago. I missed it. It went out to 70 to 1. Didn't cost me anything. Didn't cost anything. I still have the same silver. Same silver. And instead of it moving to 16 2 years ago, it'll probably be 3 or 4 or 5 years from now. Or next year, or next week, or next month. I can't tell you when. I'm not a prophet. Neither is Franklin Sanders. But there's one thing that we're all pretty convinced about. It's going to move back at some point in time. So you want that book on arbitrage. So if you called Sanders and said, hey, I heard Gordon talking about arbitrage. That's a French word now. Maybe it's a little hard for you to pronounce, but gold and silver. You've got a book there, Mr. Sanders, on gold and silver, why silver is going to outperform gold. I'd like to get a copy of that book from you. All right, now intelligent people will soon begin to realize in growing numbers that with the current dynamics of the global silver market, it's totally absurd to even suggest that current inventories could have increased by 200% in 3 years. As this realization grows in size and vehemence, several events are certain to occur. Now, CNBC and the money gurus, these investment gurus, they have been downplaying precious metals for God, 50 years, maybe 75. They call it a barbaric relic. Now, in the Bible, the creator of the universe demands that we use gold and silver, demands that we use just weights and balances. by law. So the creator of the universe didn't think that gold and silver was a barbaric relic, irrespective of the good folks on CNBC. Now, the fact is that apart from a lot of these experts, it's hard to find any significant group of people who don't think of silver as a precious metal. Now, this brings us back to the second huge implication derived from the fact that silver is consumed in most applications in trace amounts. This is something which, to the best of my knowledge, has not yet been discussed by anybody else. It is basic economics that when an input of production is used in small amounts, then the price of this input is very inelastic. To explain this without the economic jargon, I'll refer one more time to the example of polyester sportswear. As I pointed out earlier, 1,200 tons of silver is enough to fabricate 20 million tons of polyester clothes. This means that by weight, silver only represents a little more than 1/20,000th of the inputs in this product. Thus, if the price of silver were to double, this would have such a tiny impact on the final price of the sportswear that demand would not change at all for silver used in the sportswear garment industry. In reality, the price of silver could likely increase 1,000% with little or no effect on demand in that industry. Now, obviously, not all applications of silver use such tiny amounts of silver, but with the rapidly increasing use of silver in nanotechnology, many of these new applications will use even smaller amounts of silver. Therefore, unlike almost any other commodity on Earth, even with an extremely large and rapid increase in price, there will be a relatively small decline in demand. Now, the world is currently facing the largest silver shortage in centuries. Meanwhile, the manipulators have deceived the market into believing that global silver supplies have tripled in a little more than 3 years because the phony paper promises of so-called bullion ETFs are included in those inventories. All right, let's pause here for a moment. There's a program out there called ETFs, Exchange Something Something, where people buy and sell, and they're buying and selling in papers, what they are. The ETF is a company, and they claim that they've got a warehouse full of silver. And so you buy so many ounces of silver in the warehouse. These ETFs have gone out here, and they have, with their paper promises, sold 16 years worth of silver into the future, 280,000 tons. That's sold. They've collected the money for it. But the silver isn't there, hasn't been mined out of the ground yet. And people are buying, selling, and trading those pieces of paper. Now, they're claiming that they've got an ounce of silver for every one of those pieces of paper. Well, if they do, then the price of silver isn't going to change much from what it is today. We think they're lying. In fact, all the numbers, all the statistics, and all the facts that we can muster on the subject matter tell us they're lying. So that's what I'm reporting to you, that if you think that all that silver is out there, well, get after it. But there isn't anybody in the know that believes that it's out there. So we're all sitting over here saying, hey, wait a minute, this charade's going to come to an end here at some point in time. It's kind of like this housing bubble. You know, we said, those that were in the know said, hey, this thing's going to come to a no good end here one of these days. But you couldn't tell people that in 2002 or 3 or 4 or 5. Hell, those people aren't interested in listening to that kind of tripe. They're interested in making profits, and they're out there busy making profits. No doubt about it. And when this thing comes to pass, you'll have about a 10-day window here to move your silver into gold. You got to remember that this window, when it peaks at 16 to 1, it doesn't stay at 16 to 1 forever, you know. Last time was in 1980, there was a 10-day window there. So you need to get busy and unload your silver at the peak of the market. Now, 16 to 1 is where the peak is going to be. When it hits 20, a lot of you people might want to take your profits early. And in fact, this guy, Franklin Sanders, recommends that you take your profits regularly. When it moves from 70 to 50, for instance, he'll recommend that you take your profit on that 20-point spread. Because the price might go from, as it did here, from 45 to 70, it might go from 70 to 45, and then 45 to 60, and then 60 to 30, and 30 to 70 again. You know, you never can tell. So this guy has a strategy for doing that, and you'll find that in his book. Hey, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listener. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, I'm talking about the history of silver here. Now, intelligent people will soon begin to realize in growing numbers that with the current dynamics of the global silver market, it is totally absurd to even suggest that current inventories could have increased by 200% in 3 years. As this realization grows in size, several events are certain to occur. First of all, large investors are going to start hoarding silver again. You can think about the Hunt brothers back in 1980, except that now there is hundreds of times as much capital floating around, and there's 90% less silver. So let me tell you how much more money is in circulation than there was in 1980. First of all, inflation moved up 100% between 1980 and 2000. The money supply doubled, and then inflation is a reflection of that money supply. Then inflation increased by 30% between the year 2000 and 2006. In 6 years, it went up one-third more. Now, since September of 2008, there was more inflation between 2006 and 2008, but you know, it'd be marginal, 5% or something like that. But the big inflation that's just occurred is a doubling of our money supply between September of 2008 and July of 2009. So in 9 months, we have more than doubled our money supply again. Now, it takes approximately 18 to 36 months for this inflation to manifest itself. So when government goes out and spends a big pot of money like these stimulus packages, that does not immediately translate into inflation at the grocery store. It takes time for that money to circulate through the economy, but it bids up prices over time, and the time frame is 18 to 36 months. So when we look at the time frame 1980 to 2000, assuming that you had $10,000 in the bank in 1980, you just left it there. Between 1980 and 2000, the purchasing power of your $10,000 halved, less the value of the interest that was added to it. So in 2000, you ended up with $5,000 worth of purchasing power plus interest. The interest had to have been at least 10% in order for you people between 1980 and 2000 to have broken even or to have made a little profit. And I say little, because that 5% interest compounded annually from 1960 to 2000, you lost 38% of your purchasing power, and that's with 5% compounded annually. So you end up with $70,000 over 40 years, but you end up with less purchasing power. And that's where you people are with your 401ks. You've been to public school. Nobody taught you how to do percentages. And they do that on purpose. It's not an accident that you people have been dumbed down. It's done so that you can't figure out what the hell we're doing to you. So the Wall Street banks are in control of your government. They're in control of your news media, and they're in control of your schools. They control what you learn. They control what you hear. And they control what you know. That's where reality's at. Now, thanks to the internet, there's a lot of people out there that are writing blogs and that are putting information out there for you to learn from. So it's not a total loss, but it is a significant loss through the educational system, through the monetary system, and our governmental system. Now, the second, pressure will mount on the various forms of silver or the fraud conducted concerning silver currently taking place. Now, consider this. It is the manipulators, the fraudulent bullion banks themselves, who are telling us that two-thirds of the global silver inventories are held in these bullion ETFs. 2/3 of the global silver. Now they're telling us are being held in these ETFs. Well, now we don't know that. We're listening to what these guys are telling us, and they say they've got 600 million ounces. Well, okay, but 600 million ounces is only a fourth of the amount of gold that's out there, and the natural amount of silver should be 9 billion ounces. There should be, because 50 years ago there was 9 billion ounces stacked up against the gold, but that 9 billion ounces has now been consumed, but they're telling you, no, it hasn't, it's still there. But it's worse than that. Not only has it been consumed, the silver production itself has been dropping off, while the silver sales themselves have been increasing. Until now, they've got 16 years sold into the future. So the Hunt brothers, who were trying to corner the market in silver back in 1980, have been eclipsed by the Wall Street banks. Three of those Wall Street banks now have 85% of all the silver that's out there. Now, remember, India has one half, so they don't have that. But of all the rest of it, and that's other than, you know, what I've got in my pockets and you've got in your pockets and Joe Sixpack's got over here buried in a hole in the ground, they got 85%. Now, they say there's 600 million ounces. We doubt it. Ted Butler thinks it's 6% of that. Maybe they got 3 or 4 million ounces. Well, I don't know. Meanwhile, these same criminals are holding a short position in the COMEX, somewhere close to half the global inventories based upon the COMEX Commitment of Traders report. This raises the obvious question. Well, then what's backing this short silver position? Obviously, by definition, the manipulators cannot hold more than 100% of all the silver that there is. I mean, 100% is 100%. So assuming they've got the whole 100%, they've shorted the market more than that. So we know that there's a deficit. We don't know how big that deficit is. It just has to be 1 ounce. We think it's in the billions of ounces that's in deficit. But they could not deliver on billions of ounces that are owed. But, you know, that hasn't come to the fore yet, because so far they've been able to make their payments. Now, let's suppose that you've heard of runs on the bank. Let's suppose 1,000 people have $1,000 in the bank. That's $1 million. And so the 1,000 people out here in the community, they all have $1,000 in the bank. Now, all of those 1,000 people go to the bank every now and again and draw some money out. Now, the bank keeps a reserve. In the old days, they used to keep a 17% reserve, which would be $170,000 out of the million. Today, they keep 5%, some less. So 5% of a million would be $50,000. So they keep $50,000 in the bank. Those 1,000 people, if all of them came in today and then wanted $51, the bank couldn't pay. They don't have it. Fortunately, most of those people do not come in and ask for their money. And anybody that comes in and asks for $5,000, that's no big deal. They've got $50,000 over here in the vault. They can meet that $5,000 withdrawal. But you need to remember that all of those people, as an aggregate group, have $1 million worth of claims against the bank. Now, what compounds the bank's problem is that the bank goes out and they lend out $950,000 of that. So the bank has got $50,000 of our money sitting in the vault, but $950,000 is lent out. Now, we all know that. Now, the people that the bank lends that $950,000 to, they don't actually take the money out of the bank, so the bank lends that money, $100,000 to you, $100,000 to me, and they just create deposit accounts, checkbook money, this is called. So that bank can take that $1 million and they can lend that out over and over and over again until they have lent out just a little under $2 million. And they just have to keep a 5% reserve for each new loan that they make. All right, so the bank can have $100,000 and have $2 million lent out. That's what fractional reserving is all about. Now, these bullion banks and these ETFs have done the same thing, except that they've loaned out, used up, and sold and spent all of these billions of ounces of silver over the past 50 years. Oh, yeah, they still got their 50,000 or their 600,000 ounces sitting in the bullion banks over here, and so far only 18% of the customers are taking theirs out. Everybody else is leaving it there in the form of a demand deposit. However, if at any time a crisis occurs in the marketplace, guess what happens? You and I go out and we say, give us our money out of the bank. Give me my whole $1,000. Well, the first guy that goes in and takes out his whole $1,000, it's no big deal. The second guy, fifth guy, tenth guy, that's okay. But pretty soon you get 200 people demanding their $1,000 out of the bank. Well, that's 200,000. The bank's only got 50. So it doesn't take you long to figure out the bank is going to run out of money, and this is called a run on the bank. And it takes some kind of a crisis to do that. It takes the collapse of a monetary system in Great Britain. It takes a default on the bonds in the United States, or like in the Soviet Union in 1989, they defaulted on their debt. I told you what the Russian ruble was worth. Now, since then, they've made strides to correct those imbalances, but the people that were holding those old Russian rubles took it in the shorts. Now, there's another factor coming up here that's being discussed in the Congress I want to bring to your attention, and that's the nationalization of all of the retirement accounts. Now, the United States is desperate for money, and desperate people, especially desperate politicians, do desperate things. And this isn't a new thing. It's been done in countries before, most recently in Brazil. And the Brazilian government just went out and nationalized all the bank accounts in excess of $1,600. That might have been 20 years ago now, but that's the precedent setter. Then they did it, and other countries have done it, and then you can rest assured that the United States of America is going to do it, because we need to. There's an emergency at hand. So let's suppose that you got $400,000 in your 401k. The government's going to pass legislation, and they'll just nationalize that $400,000, and they'll put that $400,000 deposit in the bank here in the Social Security Administration to be administered by your government, because we know what's good for you, which isn't going to hurt you a hell of a lot, because you're already losing 13% a year in purchasing power to the deflation of the dollar to start with. But then when you find out that you haven't got your savings that you've been saving for the last 30 years, you know, that's going to be a shocker, isn't it? And then they'll use that to pay Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security payments. That's temporary. It isn't going to last forever. They'll buy up a bunch of bonds from the Chinese and the Japanese to stabilize international bond markets. They're going to use your money to do it. So make up your mind to that. That's what's going to happen. Now, the alternative is you cash out today, which means you have to pay a penalty. You got to pay your tax penalty. And I'm not advocating that you do it. See, I'm not here to tell you, here's what you need to do. Hell, I don't know what's good for you. You go figure this out for yourself. You're an adult. You ought to know where the Great Wall of China is. And if you don't, that's not my fault. You ought to know in what country, we'd find the Panama Canal. Now, if I ask you, in what country would you find the Suez Canal? Now, that might be a little tricky, because you won't find it in Suez. You're going to find it in Egypt. But the moral to the story is, Americans have been dumbed down to a degree that's unparalleled in the history of the world. Never, never have so many people been so ignorant of so much in so short a period of time in the history of the world. And if you can name one, point it out, would you? I mean, hell, even a serf in the Middle Ages, dumb without any education at all, was smart enough to bury his gold in a hole in the ground. Now, meanwhile, these same criminals are holding a short position in the COMEX market, somewhere close to half of all of the global inventories, based upon the COMEX Commitment of Traders report. You know, just using their own reports, we can see that there's skullduggery afoot. So we're not basing this, you know, on our theories. We're basing it on the numbers that are being reported. And then you go back and you say, hey, wait a minute. You people have shorted the market $100, and you claim that you've got $100 in there. Well, my God, you can't have in there something that's already gone. Now, if they could somehow manage to cover their own short positions, there assuredly would be little or nothing left over for the bullion ETF sitting there with their paper promises. Now, even if these three big banks could actually go out and pay off in physical silver, if they could, it's going to take all the silver that they say that's available in the world, and they're not claiming there's 9 billion ounces. They're claiming there's 600 million. There should be 9 billion, but there isn't. Nobody believes that. But most people believe there's 600 million. Well, my God, you've got billions of ounces promised out. I'll tell you how many there are. You got 600 million times 15 years, which is 9 billion ounces. That's what you got out promised. And anybody in the world believes that. That isn't there. So you're going to have to wait to get paid. That's in the best case scenario. Now, when the current surge in demand for silver turns into a frantic rush to grab as much bullion as possible, while it's priced at no more than one-fourth of its current value, that'll be the end of the manipulators and the end of all those bullion ETFs who don't physically possess their own bullion. The only remaining question is whether this will occur in the next decade, next year, next month, or next week. We don't know. And I'm not a prophet, and I'm not here to tell you that I do know. I can't tell you. I've been expecting this thing to turn turtle over the last 30 years. I'm surprised they've been able to keep it going as long as they have. Can they keep it going for another 30 years? Oh, that'll be a trick. That'd be a real trick. And I don't believe it, but then, you know, maybe. And that's for you. You go out here and you speculate and gamble. But over the last 40 years, we've done nothing but lose money in the stock market. And I'm talking about Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife. Now, the money manipulators, the big banks over here, they're making money at it. The stockbrokers are making money. You know, the investment banks, they're all making money. I don't deny that. But you and I aren't. You and I aren't doing jack diddly squat. And that's because we're losing our shirt, stock stocking our money in these worthless, irredeemable paper dollars. And it doesn't make any difference whether you Russians are storing your money in those worthless, irredeemable rubles, or you Indians are doing it in rupees, or you Japanese are doing it in yen, or the Chinese in won. Everybody that deals in paper is losing their money. They're losing their real wealth. That's the bottom line. Which is why the Ten Commandment model has always been a better model to follow for at least the little guys, the Joe Sixpacks down here at the bottom of the pond. Now, the big guys, they're the guys that want inflation. They're the guys that want paper money. God and common sense dictate that we want the gold, the silver, the wheat, the corn, the beans, the honey, and the oil. We want the physical possession of the physical property. And you might be thinking about, you know, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil before you stockpile a lot of gold and silver. Because the people who are holding the gold and the silver believe that they will be able to trade that for wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. But there's another story out there. The wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil isn't out there either. And there are huge, humongous shortages of foodstuffs worldwide. And there are huge, humongous shortages in production worldwide, which is also manipulated to make us all believe that the world is awash in food and everything is hunky-dory, when the reality is worldwide, there's only a 38-day supply. 38 days. Boys and girls, there's 365 days in the year, and there's only one harvest per year. That means that you have to have a minimum 365-day supply on hand at all times. Minimum. And you've only got a 38-day supply. I'm not sure that gold and silver is really the biggest problem we face. I think probably food is the bigger problem. And those of you with the gold and silver, remember, are expecting to trade that for food that isn't any more accessible than the gold or silver. All right, we're out of time. I got to leave it right there and remind you that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log, our schedule, and our archives. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.